Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm John Snowflake Hodge, joined by Jumbo Cheese, JC Abbott. And today we're discussing Cody Fajardo's relief that the Montreal Alouettes avoided a free agency mass exodus.
Larry Dean retiring to join the front office with the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
CFL legends Don Narcisse and James West being inducted into the Texas Southern Hall of Fame.
Trailblazing kicker Maya Turner being honored by the Winnipeg Jets.
And the passing of legendary CFL head coach Dave Ritchie. But first,
Hodge, you finally published your first mock draft ahead of the 2024 CFL draft. I know you agonized over this article for weeks, if not months, but let's talk about it now.
Yeah, the mock drafts are, I kind of like feel like Smeagol from Lord of the Rings, you know what I mean? Where he like simultaneously loves and hates the ring, and he simultaneously loves and hates himself for loving the ring. That's how I feel about my mock drafts. I'm like a junkie. I can't not do the mock draft. I can't not put all of my heart and soul and effort into it, but I also simultaneously disdain the mock draft because inevitably with every mock draft, You put it together, you start piecing things, and you're like, wow, this is amazing. And you come back to it 24 hours later, and you go, this is the worst thing that anyone has ever made in the history of humanity, dating back to our caveman roots when we were banging bones and sticks together. So this is the work of, I mean, as I labeled it in the article, it is a combination of informed speculation and personal opinion. To give our listeners and our readers, and please check it out if you haven't already, I will say, as much as the CFL draft is not the most hot button topic in the league, right? People always want to talk about free agency. They want to talk about Labor Day. They want to talk about Grey Cup. My mock drafts are exceptionally well read. People obviously are very, very interested in seeing where these prospects could end up. And obviously, these things are subject to NFL interest, right? There's going to be a number of players available in this year's CFL draft who are potential NFLers, either as draftees or UDFAs, undrafted free agents or priority free agents. But just to give everybody a little bit of history, so I went back to look at my 2022 mock draft. This is my first one that came out before the CFL Combine, and I did not get any of the top nine selections correct. However, of those nine selections, I got five correct as first rounders. So they weren't in the right spot, but more than half of the players I listed did end up getting taken in the first round. And of those I missed on, Noah Zur, Tyrell Ford, and Deontay Knight, all three of those went pretty early in the second round. So I got the vast majority of the players correct. It was a two round, at least in terms of placing them within the right round. And then out of the two rounds, I did get a couple of selections bang on. I got Daniel Adebaboye to Toronto and Jesse Luketa as the territorial to Ottawa. Last year, it was a very similar story. In 2023, I got six of the nine picks correct in the first round. Again, not perfect in terms of the right pick to the right team, but six of the players I listed in the first round went in the first round. And of those three that I missed, one of them was Siriman Bagayogo out of Guelph, who ended up going, again, pretty early in the second round. So, I'm not guaranteeing that any of these picks will be bang on. It is a three-round mock draft that's done 7 weeks before the draft and a week before the combine. So take that for what it's worth. But I would like to think that come draft day on April 30th, at least six, maybe upwards of seven, dare I say eight, of the players I listed in the first round here will be going in the first round in the real CFL draft.
All right, let's not beat around the bush here, Hodge. The Edmonton Elks are on the clock right now. Who do they take first overall?
Well, I've got them taking Nick Mardner. Nick Mardner is 6'6", 205 pounds. He's explosive. He runs smooth routes. And I think one of the things that actually works greatly to the Edmonton Elks' advantage is that he transferred to Auburn this past season playing for the Tigers, and he dressed for only four games and didn't make any catches. Now, it's not super uncommon for players to transfer into top NCAA programs as seniors or super seniors with that extra year of eligibility and not be given a ton of play time, just because, you know, these aren't younger players who are developing. These are not players that, you know, the coaches there recruited to their program and are loyal to over a span of 4 or 5 years. But Mardner was extremely productive. Previously, he had almost 1,000 yards at the University of Hawaii in 2021, had a middling season in 2022 after transferring to the University of Cincinnati. But I think that receiver is a big position of need for the Elks. People might scratch their heads at that going, well, they just traded for Curley Gittens Jr. Yes, but Curley Gittens Jr., first of all, is coming off a down year. Second of all, I don't think from a size and speed perspective really fits that Elks Chris Jones frame that they like. Mm-hmm. And he's also on an expiring contract that pays him like one of the top, not just Canadian receivers in the league, but receivers period. So I think Nick Mardner could be a really good option moving forward as a player who could start regardless of nationality and potentially help Edmonton get out from under what is a very sizable contract for Curley Gittens Jr. or even guys like Dylan Mitchell, who didn't perform, frankly, all that well in 2023. You know, you can't argue with 6'6". Guys like that do not come to the CFL very often, especially with a strong NCAA pedigree. And again, given the kind of unique circumstance of him having a down year in 2023, you might get him right away. And I do not see the Edmonton Elks taking a player with this pick who they're not getting right away, because after back-to-back four-win seasons, Edmonton can't roll the dice here. They need to sign a player or need to sign whoever they take with this first overall pick. And I think Nick Mardner is a great option for that selection.
Yeah, even in terms of a depth upgrade right now behind Curley Gittens Jr., a Canadian receiver, you've got Gavin Cobb and Vincent Forbes-Mombolo, both players I love coming out of the draft, guys who have started for them. But with all due respect to both of those guys, Nick Mardner is a much better prospect, if only because he can reach the top shelf in the pantry, right? Those guys are both 5'9". This guy's 6'6". You don't see that in a receiver. And frankly, if he had managed his college career a little bit better, I think he would be in the NFL with at least a UDFA contract. This is a guy who 3 years ago was a 1,000-yard receiver at Hawaii, rolled the dice, decided to transfer to a bigger program in Cincinnati first, went there, had a down year, about 200 yards receiving. People were a little underwhelmed, decided to come back to school, but rather than stick with the Bearcats, maybe improve his production at that type of program and get himself back on the radar, decided to take another gamble and go to an even larger program in Auburn, which could have paid off big for him if he had succeeded, but basically dropped off the map entirely. I think it's a foregone conclusion. He's not going to be in the NFL, and that will be the Elks' benefit. At number two overall, Hodge, you have the Ottawa Redblacks taking a guy who we teased on the podcast last week, and you reported earlier this week would be attending the CFL Combine. That is a veteran linebacker, Joel DeBlanco. How does he fall to number two?
Well, I do think there's a reasonable chance that he could be the first overall pick. Like Mardner, I think the priority here for a team like, whether it's Edmonton at one or Ottawa at two, you need to make sure this guy's in training camp. And Joel DeBlanco will be in training camp with the CFL team in 2024 because he's already gone through the NFL rigmarole. He's 26 years old. He was a first team all AAC or named first team all AAC, with the Cincinnati Bearcats in 2021, where he also served as a team captain and has since been a member of the New Orleans Saints, the Seattle Seahawks, and was a starter this past season in the USFL, and even garnered interest from CFL teams as an American. Not unlike, by the way, Alex Singleton, who I'm sure he's going to be compared to a bunch over this draft process, before he got his Canadian status through his father, who was born in Edmonton. And it was one of those kind of classic stories, from what I understand, where, you know, Joel and his camp were kind of talking to, you know, agents, talking to teams, whatever. And his dad let it slip. Oh, I'm actually from Edmonton. And then all of a sudden, the light bulb went on. It was like, oh, this guy's Canadian. He can go in the draft. And I think it's really neat that he's coming to the combine and plans to fully participate. Generally, veteran players do not want to run the 40-yard dash after preparing for it. You know, coming out of school, obviously. He did test coming out of Cincinnati ahead of the 2022 NFL draft. And at 6'3", 240 pounds, ran a 4.76, 35-inch vertical. He's certainly got the athleticism to play in the middle of the CFL. I've talked to multiple people who have indicated that he could be a potential year one starter in the CFL. For those who remember Alex Singleton, he did not start immediately coming out of that draft year. Tank Reed was the starter at middle linebacker for the Calgary Stampeders, but Alex Singleton won that starting job, I believe, by Labor Day. And I think that Joel DeBlanco could be, I'm not saying he will be, but I think he could potentially be on a similar trajectory where he comes in, dominates on special teams, plays some defensive packages, and then by the midway point of the season, it's like, okay, this guy has figured out how to play three-down football, and he is going to be a starter for this team.
Yeah, there's some striking similarities between the two, and I have seen comments online since you broke the news, Hodge. What about the amateurism? How can a professional athlete be in the CFL draft? That has nothing to do with it. Amateurism is an archaic function of the NCAA and college football. It's not, has nothing to do with your eligibility for the draft. You could have a 10-year NFL career, and if you get your Canadian citizenship that day, you could enter into the CFL draft. It's all about when you fill out the paperwork. I know some people have issues with nationalizing guys who have never lived in Canada. I actually don't have a problem with it. We have enough of a brain drain going down to the States as it is, as a smaller country beside a behemoth. Let's steal a couple of those elite athletes back, get them back on Canadian soil.
Also, how can you say a guy's not Canadian when he's literally Canadian? Like, this man has his Canadian citizenship. And yes, I appreciate that. You know, unlike some people, there are players, right, who get their Canadian citizenship late and who spent a lot of time in Canada. I remember talking to Cole Tucker, who's a first-round pick last year out of Northern Illinois, to the Calgary Stampeders. You know, his family is in Brandon, Manitoba. And he's like, yeah, we spent lots of summers going up to Brandon. And, like, there are lots of stories from guys who did spend meaningful time north of the border. We're going to talk about one of those guys later on in the show in the three-minute drill. It's true. I don't think Joel DeBlanco has spent much, if any, time in Canada. But I don't care. And as for the amateurism thing, guess what? The CFL draft is weird. Get used to it. It's part of what makes it fun.
Just be thankful he's alive, because that has been a question mark at times with the CFL draft. That heavy breathing you hear, Hodge, that's everyone in Regina trying to find out who the Riders are picking at number three and turn their franchise around. You have them going with Malik Stryker from Arkansas State. Is he a linebacker? Is he a DB? Where does Stryker fit on the Riders roster?
Well, he is a tweener, which is a bit of a challenge, right? He's about 5'10", about 216 pounds. I'm curious to see how he measures in officially. Also, I've just literally now, as we're recording this, caught word that he will not be attending the CFL Combine in favor of sticking with his pro day at Arkansas State, which is kind of interesting. I'm a little disappointed we won't get to see him up close and personal. But, I mean, he was unbelievably productive in just three seasons with the Red Wolves. 216 total tackles, 17 tackles for loss, four knockdowns, two picks, two sacks, two forced fumbles. You know, the Riders are a team that has flirted with starting a Canadian kind of in that Sam linebacker role. Like, Godfrey Onyeka has been there forever. He can't stay healthy, but has looked good at times. I think Malik Stryker is a player who, first of all, will be a demon on special teams from day one, but I think could be that potential long-term starter at safety that they've kind of tried to figure out, right? They've got Jackson Ford, who I think is a really nice player. They took in the second round last year. But, you know, they have some other guys. I'm not sure any of them really are the answer back there since Mike Edom retired. You know, like, I like Jaden Dahlke. Does he have enough range to be an every down player at safety? I'm a little bit skeptical. So to me, Stryker is a guy who has a very, very high floor. And as much as he would need to get used to the spacing on the CFL field and maybe learn a little bit in terms of how to manipulate coverage, those types of things, I do think that he would be a shrewd pick here for the Riders. And I know that Ryderville is probably banging the table going, well, where's our O-lineman? Where's our O-lineman? This offensive line, we need to address it. Well, guess what? There are so many good offensive linemen in this draft. I think the Riders can easily afford to wait until 12th overall to get their O-lineman. Yes, I could see them grabbing an O-lineman here, but I don't think this is a team that needs to panic and take an O-lineman at three, especially since they added Ryan Sevier in free agency. I think this is a team that can afford to wait till round two at pick 12 and take their offensive lineman there, because they've already addressed that position to at least some extent in free agency over the past 2 years.
Yeah. You note the adjustment with Straker coming back to the Canadian field. Well, we should also note that it's not going to be foreign to him, because he transferred to Arkansas State from Carleton, where he played DB, was a Sam linebacker for that program, played some half for the Ravens as well. So he is familiar with it. It's been a few years, but he knows how to play those positions. He knows the Canadian game before going on to have an incredibly successful NCAA career with the Red Bulls. You talk about the offensive linemen in this draft, and there is a ton of them. The first one you have going off the board is at number four with the Calgary Stampeders, Gabe Wallace from the University at Buffalo. What can you tell me about the big man?
Well, you're the one who's interviewed him in person, so I mean, I think you're the better one to talk about him, but to me, the Calgary Stampeders have the thinnest offensive line in the CFL right now. Their depth has been riddled, right? This was a unit that was once proud and among the best in the CFL. Right now, I think it's among the worst in the CFL. I think they have to go offensive line with this pick at four. I also think the Calgary Stampeders might be a team that could go, because they've got 2 second rounders. I almost wouldn't hate taking two offensive linemen, depending on who is on the board. But Wallace, I think, is among the safest picks here. Now, he's testing at the Buffalo Pro Day on Thursday. That's the day after we're recording this on March 14th. So we don't know the testing numbers yet, but he's 6'6", 340 pounds, originally from Salmon Arm, BC. He is somebody who has played the tackle position, where the Stampeders have kind of flirted with starting with right tackle, potentially with Bryce Bell. So I think that versatility helps him. But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, he is a put your hand in the dirt run blocking guard, and he is somebody who I think can open holes for those running backs. Dedrick Mills, you know, I was going to say Jamal Morrow. I guess Jamal Morrow is not technically under contract there right now, but with the number of running backs that are in Cowtown, I think that he is a safe option for a team that needs a safe option along the offensive line. And unlike a number of the top offensive linemen in this draft, at least right now, I don't see Gabe Wallace signing an NFL contract this offseason, which I think is also key, right? There are better offensive linemen available, in my opinion. The catch 22 is they might be better, but they might never end up playing in the CFL. So I think Gabe Wallace is kind of that perfect balance of, this is a guy who's going to be a starter. He's going to be a really nice CFL player, but you're probably going to get him right away, depending, of course, on how his pro day goes.
Yeah, I've been covering the draft for Three Down for 5 years now.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I've interviewed a lot of draft prospects in that time, sat down with guys, looked them in the eyes, and many of them are great individuals that are fun to chat with. I have never sat across from a guy who so clearly was going to be a fan favorite like Gabe Wallace. The guy looks the part. I mean, he is a massive individual. I talked to him down at the College Gridiron Showcase. He measures in at 6'6", 346 pounds there. He's thick all the way through. He's got that greasy, slick back hair, the scruffy beard, a little gap-tooth grin. He's smiling the whole time. But he just likes to get down and nasty with it on the field, which is what you want in a run-heavy offense like the Calgary Stampeders. That's what he did so well at Buffalo. It's what he's been doing basically his entire life. And I asked him, I'm like, is there players that you model your game after that you watch? Well, he didn't go to the old familiar favorites. He didn't say, I'm Jason Kelce or I'm this or that. He goes, you know, I like to watch the old guys. I'm the Great Wall of Dallas. I think I'm like Kevin Gogan. He's not very athletic, but he's just mean and nasty. And I tell you what, as an offensive line guy, that was so deeply exciting to talk to a prospect about Kevin Gogan, of all people. And then he goes on, and the other guy from the 70s, the Ray Art Shell, just so mean. Amazing. These are the types of people that Gabe Wallace is watching. Well, I should note, he's got his headphones in, listening to classical music, because that's how he focuses up. He likes himself a little Dvorak before a game. He is a unique individual. A team is going to love his mentality, and I think he is going to be a stalwart along a CFL offensive line.
Certainly seems like quite the character. I'm looking forward to getting a chance to talk to him. He will not be at the Combine. He's attending his own pro day. But he's somebody who I'm sure will be around the CFL for a long, long time, depending, of course, on the NFL. Let's go through the rest of this first round, JC. Jeffrey Canton-Arcou is a big dice roll for Toronto at five, just because I do think he has a legit shot of signing a PFA contract in the NFL. But I think the Argos of probably any team in the CFL have the most ability to be patient here and roll the dice. I don't see any immediate needs on Toronto's roster. I think they've drafted really well over the last few years. They've done a nice job of developing a number of Canadian players and also picking some guys up off the scrap heap from, you know, free agency, cast offs from other teams. And I mean, there's a reason, with all due respect to, you know, some of the losses they've had this offseason, there is a reason this team won 16 games last year. So I have them rolling the dice there. Giovanni Manu will be in the NFL, I believe. However, I have him going to the BC Lions at six because, first of all, if BC wants to address its offensive line in the short term, there are some good free agents still kicking around, guys like Landon Rice, guys like Jeff Gray, who are currently not under contract, Sean Jamieson, that they could pick up. And I just don't see the Lions letting a local stalwart get by them, because I do think Manu will eventually end up in the CFL. He's been an absolute stud with the Thunderbirds. I think the Lions take him there. And then I've got Kyle Hergel, arguably the best offensive lineman available. He is somebody I have going to Hamilton at seven. He's going to be a wild card, because as much as he is a dominant guard at the collegiate level, he's only 6'2". And that's the same problem that, you know, guys like Drew Desjarlais, for instance, have run into, where, you know, yeah, they've got all the talent and grit in the world, but when NFL teams see that you're 6'2", that is really a problem for them. They would happily take a less talented player, it would seem, who is 6'6" to play guard rather than 6'2". So that's why I've got him slotted in there. George Una out of Windsor to Winnipeg at eight. This is probably the one I've had most people that I've talked to behind the scenes raise their eyebrow at. He's a bit of a divisive player. Some teams are high on him, some teams are not. I think Winnipeg has to take an O-lineman here. They've got Liam Dobson heading into a contract year. They've got Patrick Neufeldt, though he is a perennial all-star, recently turning 35. This is a team that I think needs to address the offensive line. If Hergel falls here, I think Winnipeg would run to the podium to make that pick. If Gabe Wallace fell here, I think Winnipeg would run to the podium to make that pick. But right now I've got Una. The Bombers have had a lot of success drafting athletic offensive linemen out of the OUA. The Lancers had a great run game this past year. I think he's a nice fit for Winnipeg style. And of course, he will not be pressed into a starting role for one, maybe 2 years in Bomberland. If, of course, he is the pick, they will develop him slowly. And then to round out the top of the first round, I've got Daniel Opoku out of San Diego State to the Montreal Alouettes. The Alouettes are probably going to start a defensive lineman who is Canadian in 2024. Yes, they added Derek Wigan in free agency. Yes, they added Isaac Adeyemi Berglund in free agency. But they lost Luol Ugoek, who is an absolute fantastic first-round pick this past year at a TCU. I see Daniel Opoku, a guy who's 6'5", 275 pounds with length, as a guy who can slot inside, can slot outside, and be a versatile piece of the future. Because at 31, Derek Wigan, I don't think, is a long-term fit for the Alouettes. I think he's a really nice player for this year. Maybe he'll be one and done, right, for the Alouettes. I think Daniel Opoku is a nice selection to bring into the spot for the Alouettes. I'm curious, JC, looking at round two, we're not going to go through every pick in round two. That would take too long. And also, right, we want people to go read the article. But in round two, is there somebody who sticks out to you?
Well, there's a lot of talented players in that second round. Lots of guys that I absolutely love. I think the most fascinating pick may be the first one in the second round. You have at number 10 overall, the Edmonton Elks going with Luke Brubacker out of Wilfrid Laurier University, a defensive end. I think of all the picks in your mock, if I was to take a team and a player and say, these guys are absolutely going to end up together, it's fate, it would be Brubacker and the Elks. This kid did not play an ounce of football his entire life until he walked onto the campus of Wilfrid Laurier University as a wrestler and was convinced to walk onto the football team. He became a defensive end, and his testing numbers are absolutely absurd. He's over 6'5", 246 pounds. At the East-West Bowl, his vertical jump, 38 inches. And he ran 4.89 on what was a very slow track there at McMaster. I expect him to run faster at the CFL Combine next week. He's going to check all the athletic boxes. And this is a team in Edmonton that we know loves freaks like that and has very much based their draft strategy on athleticism. Last year, they took Luke Burton-Cran, who was essentially the top long snapper in the draft, in the third round, and decided to play him at defensive end because they liked his testing numbers so much that they felt he was a better fit there, and they couldn't pass him up. I think if Brubacker is on the board at the top of the second round, the Edmonton Elks are going to be salivating to use that selection on a guy who's going to be able to play special teams and contribute on a defensive line that's going to have a pretty heavy rotation of Canadians in it right now.
I will touch on the very next pick, which at 11 is Kevin Mattal, receiver out of Laval Rougeor to the Ottawa Redblacks. To me, this would be a slam dunk pick for the Redblacks. I think Ottawa's done a great job of stacking their offensive line over the last couple of drafts. I think it's time for them to start addressing some of those skill position players. I've made no secret on this podcast that I don't think Ottawa's receiving core is good enough. Now, they have added Dominic Grimes, full credit to them, who I think is a very solid player. But Kevin Mattal, I think, has the potential to be the best Canadian receiver in the CFL. The question is how he'll be viewed by teams, because in 2022, he had 58 catches for 751 yards, 12 touchdowns, won the Heck Crichton, which is, you know, for the uninitiated, essentially U Sports most valuable player. And he was also named the most valuable player in the Vanier Cup, helping Laval win a national championship. One of the best seasons in U Sports history by a receiver. Well, guess what? This past year, the numbers fell off. He only played four games. He had an ankle injury. He was also suspended for one game, stemming from some legal issues that he was facing. Those are all behind him now. However, it's interesting to see. I've talked to some teams who are still high on him. I've talked to some teams who are not as high on him. He's a bit of a polarizing player. I think the way that he runs at the combine is going to matter a lot. I've heard some people speculate that he's going to run, you know, like the high 4.6s. I've also talked to some people who believe he could run as fast as 4.5. And that will certainly matter, because if you're running high 4.6s, there's a good chance that, you know, you're exclusively going to be looked at as like a slot back who really needs the waggle. 4.5, maybe you could stick him out at Z and you could play him at that field side wide out position where maybe his speed will be enough to get that separation without the waggle. So to me, that's interesting. I think he could go in round one. I really do. But I also think he could fall a little bit, especially depending upon whether or not Nick Mardner, the other top receiver, goes NFL or is a CFL player right away. Because, of course, if he does end up signing in the NFL, he's going to fall in the CFL draft. Let's go to round three, JC. I'll pose the same question. Who stands out to you here?
Yeah, well, before we do that, I just want to say I think you really nailed that second round. There's a lot of picks and fits that I absolutely love. Ben LeBros, Tyson Hergut, Michael Chris Ike. But if we go down to the third round, I think there's a lot of boom or bust players, some people who might fall for reasons other than football. The one who really stands out to me is the number 23rd overall pick to the Saskatchewan Roughriders, Kevins Clersius from the University of Connecticut. Not a prolific receiver in the NCAA, but a guy who's caught his fair share of passes, who has had some production at a lower level on a not very good football team. But when you watch this guy, and I'll give a shout out to our contributor, Ben Grant, who's going through all the draft stuff himself, and put this in the group chat the other day. Kevin Clersius is going to be a demon on special teams. He's a guy as a receiver who's got a big enough body, who can come down, he can cover kicks, and he's an excellent stock blocker who takes pride in that phase of the game. I think he's somebody who could rise because of that element and who will extend his career over other guys who maybe flounder on the offensive side and don't have that ability to catch themselves with their special teams value. Clersius has that in strides, and I think he's an excellent pick for a team in Saskatchewan that, hey, they don't need a starter at Canadian receiver. They've got enough talent there, but maybe a little upgrade of depth. Somebody who could be the next Mitch Pickton with a little bit more special teams value. Clersius, I think, is an upgrade at that spot.
And if the Riders are going to start three receivers, of course, in Braden Lenius, Kian Schaefer-Baker, and Sam Emilis, I do think they need a fifth receiver on the roster alongside Mitch Pickton to make that work. And Clersius is not your standard, 5'9", 180-pound receiver who's going to stand on the sidelines and do nothing all game. He's a guy who's going to play 15, 20 snaps without even necessarily getting in the game on offense, which I think is a huge thing. I know that special teams is not sexy, but special teams is often a huge impact on who wins and loses games. The player I will highlight is who I've got going to the Ottawa Redblacks again, and again out of Laval University, is offensive lineman Nathaniel Demolin-Duguay. He is a player, he's a two-time U Sports All-Canadian, who I think played out of position to an extent with the Rouge Or. He played left tackle. To me, he will be a guard at the CFL level, potentially even a center if he learns how to snap. The knock on Laval, specifically offensive linemen, the past few drafts is they come out of U Sports too beat up or too old or too heavy. Well, Demolin-Duguay is 24, which is, I think, a pretty reasonable age for an RSCQ product. And he weighs an even 300 pounds. And I got to see him up close and personal this year when the Laval Rouge Or hosted the Montreal Caravans. I was at that game. I thought his body composition was really good. The issue with him is, first off, he's going to have to learn how to play inside. And secondly, the other issue is I just have a hard time placing him with anybody given the way in which I've got the draft mapped out. Like the offensive lineman going ahead of him, is it possible that Demolin-Duguay is somebody who the Riders like at 12 over Christine Ikanu? Absolutely. Is it possible that the Bombers like him at 8 over George Una? Yes, possibly. I do think that top of third round is too late for him. I think he probably ends up going higher than that, but it depends on how those offensive linemen shake out. Because when you have this glut of offensive linemen, some of whom are NFL, some of whom aren't, inevitably somebody is going to be the last one off the board. He's who I have right now, but that's not a reflection of me thinking he's a bad player. I think he's a really good player who could easily go higher. So that's why I highlighted him. The rest of the guys in round three, I look at and I say, yes, this is a round three guy, maybe even a round four guy. Like I've got the Bombers, for example, taking Brad Hladek late third round. He's a guy who's probably a fourth or fifth round guy, but the Bombers, the last I checked, have, that's right, zero fullbacks on their roster, he's probably a guy who the Bombers would be smart to take as a positional need pick. And then I've got the Montreal Eds doing the same thing, drafting fullback Paul-Antoine Ouellette out of the University de Montréal with the Carabins, because the Alouettes really need a fullback, right? They play fullbacks on offense more than any other team in the league. And James Tuck, who's a very active player on that offense this past season, is now a member of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So they need to build some depth there. So that's the mock draft. I'm sure there's at least one pick on here that, just like past years, I'm off by a few rounds. But if history holds, I should have, at least in one order or another, about two-thirds of the first round listed, and potentially the whole first round listed in the top 15 or so picks. So I'm excited for April 30th to not only see, of course, where all these players ended up, but of course to kind of grade my work, because I have gotten better over time by looking back at past drafts, seeing how things ended up, checking maybe biases that I have, or maybe also discerning, you know, of all the people I talk to, who are the people who are telling me the truth, and who are the people who are going out of their way to try to mislead me, because that is one of the tough jobs when engaging in an enterprise like this, where it is speculatory in nature, right? I'm not reporting any of this, these selections as facts. It's all speculation. So we'll see. We'll see. I know. I know. It's deeply disturbing. It's shocking. It's upsetting. But some of them do. Not all of them do. Some of them do. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'm also excited to talk about this mock draft in person with CFL folks during the combine, because inevitably some people will call me a genius and some people will call me an idiot. And that's fine. That's how the game is played. JC, legendary CFL head coach Dave Ritchie, passed away at the age of 85, leading to an outpouring of messages from former colleagues, players, and fans. The native of New Bedford, Massachusetts, went 108-76-3 during his tenure as the head coach in Montreal, BC, and Winnipeg, and was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 2022. He remains the seventh winningest coach in CFL history. How will you remember him?
Well, I mean, he was a curmudgeon with a heart of gold. And anytime you talk to one of his former players, they rave about him and his ability to interact with men and get them to follow him, even if sometimes he was a little rough around the edges and could, you know, cuss you out a little bit when you needed it. He was a guy who really believed in people and had his guys. I mean, I haven't seen the numbers if they've been updated in the last few years. This is an article I wrote on Dave Ritchie from 4 years ago. I had him down as coaching 31 different Canadian Football Hall of Famers at that point. Wow. That number has likely grown by at least one or two since then, since there's been a number of Canadian Hall of Fame draft class or induction classes since then, including the one that included Ritchie in 2022. So this is a guy who had a prolific career from a player standpoint and from a wins standpoint. For me, he's a guy that when I moved to BC, I had to live in a different rental house because Dave Ritchie was still living in the rental house that we had originally set up. So I've been tied to Dave Ritchie for a long time. I got a chance to interview him during the pandemic, speaking mostly about his time coaching in Europe, which a lot of people don't recognize. He spent a season in Italy, won an Italian championship as a defensive coordinator before he came to the Bombers in 1990. And then he went back after his retirement and coached in Switzerland for 2 years. And the reason I bring that up is because I think it highlights how much of a player's coach Dave Ritchie was, because during his time in Switzerland, he came across a young man during his time there who he felt had the capacity to play at the next level. He was a lineman named Steven Fiergawarnu, 6'3", 300-pound guy, older prospect as so many Europeans are, and he knew that this kid had aspirations of playing in the States and didn't have any real way to make it happen. So Dave Ritchie, when he moved back home, brought this kid with him, let him live in his house, got him into Robert Morris University as a football player. He had a successful NCAA career. Unfortunately, when he finished up, he was 27 years old. There was no global program. There was no prospect of him getting to the CFL, which Richie contended at the time that he could have played in the CFL if that option had been available. But this kid ended up having a life in the States and meeting his wife and is now a successful business professional, all because Dave Ritchie let the man live in his house for several years while he got settled. I think that speaks volumes about what the type of guy that Dave Ritchie was, on top of all he was as a football coach.
Yeah, I grew up in Winnipeg. I mean, I was a pretty young kid, but I was in Winnipeg reading the newspaper every morning when Dave Ritchie was the head coach of those great, great Winnipeg Blue Bombers teams of the very early 2000s. The Bombers at that time did a women camp every year where female fans of the Blue Bombers could come out and run football drills and learn football skills. And my mom went a number of years along with, I think, some of her girlfriends, but her mother, my Oma, came along a few times. And my Oma, you know, being in her 60s, early 70s, I think at the time, was not in condition to do a lot of the drills. And so she would talk about how she would spend most of the time sitting shotgun in Dave Ritchie's golf cart. And it was pretty clear that she had a massive, massive crush on Dave Ritchie. And still to this day, we'll talk very fondly about him and the conversations that they had seated next to each other on his golf cart at Old Canadian Stadium, which is funny. To me, the thing that will stand out about Dave Ritchie the most is some of the unbelievable quotes that he gave during his time in the CFL. The best one stems from the 2000 season when he was talking about, I can't remember the details, but some type of ruling. And the quote was, and I quote, "I don't want to circumcise the rules," close quote, which is hilarious. You know, a guy who was known for maybe sticking the wrong way. I'm pretty sure the word he was looking for there was circumvent, but regardless, hilarious quote. He was a quote machine. Reading some of the comments from the members of the media who covered the Bombers during that time, it was funny reading some of their stories about the things that he'd say or the things that he'd do. But he would always, right, have time for the media to come and sit in his office, which is something that, you know, just doesn't happen anymore, right? I don't think any CFL head coaches are inviting the members of the media to come and sit in their offices these days. So good for Dave Ritchie that he had so much success. And by the way, kudos to the CFL and the Canadian Football Hall of Fame committee for getting Dave Ritchie into the Hall of Fame in 2022 and giving CFL fans a chance to recognize him, giving him a chance to come north of the border and be recognized for his amazing accomplishments, because it, you know, it breaks my heart. I've said this on the show before. I'll say it again. It breaks my heart, right, when people pass away potentially not knowing how much of an impact they made, or maybe not getting a chance before they pass to just enjoy kind of those fruits of their labor and really see and hear the stories from people about how much of an impact they made. Because of course, not only is Dave Ritchie getting to hear those things, but his family members, he had 3 children, 8 grandchildren, are getting a chance to see and hear those things. And so it's just so wonderful that he was able to be recognized, able to be celebrated before passing. Rest in peace, Coach Ritchie. It's now time for Hodges' Heritage Moment. On this day in 2010, the Toronto Argonauts signed running back Corey Boyd. The South Carolina product was a 7th-round pick in the 2008 NFL Draft, who dressed for 1 career game with the Denver Broncos prior to lighting it up in the CFL as a rookie, rushing for 1,359 yards and 6 touchdowns, while catching 38 passes for 363 yards and 2 scores. The 2-time CFL All-Star was cut partway through the 2010 season, which was surprising as he led the league in rushing at the time. Boyd dressed for only 6 games with Edmonton to end the year and was out of the league by the time the season finished. JC, can you think of a player who was more of a flash in the pan than Corey Boyd?
No, I really can't. I mean, there have been some guys who have had a hot season here or there, but Boyd, as good as he was And then how it ended, it's a complete mystery. I know there's got to be a story there. It's one that I was not covering the league at the time. Obviously, I was too busy dealing with eighth grade math to be interested in the ins and outs of why Corey Boyd got cut. But there has to be more to this story, and hopefully somebody uncovers it someday.
Maybe we'll do it. And by the way, before we go to the three-minute drill, apologies to our YouTube viewers for JC's Darth Vader breathing. I will edit that out of the podcast version. It's going to stay in the YouTube version. So apologies for that. It's now time. Yeah, bro, you're Darth Vader. You're Darth Vader.
I can't breathe through my nose, man.
We got to get you an extra hole in your face or something then. I don't know. Get a tracheotomy or something. It's time for the 3-minute drill. JC, 8 players advanced from the CFL Invitational Combine to the main event in Winnipeg later this month. Which of those 8 impressed you the most?
Look, I would have pegged almost all of these 8 as guys that would have advanced. They are all on my list of prospects to preview. The one that I am most intrigued to see live is Owen Mueller from Windsor, the offensive lineman. We talked about George Unga, his teammate, potentially being a first-round pick in the CFL draft. Part of that is due to some of the impressive testing numbers he's put up and how good that Lancers offensive line was this past season. Well, Mueller's only started one season due to injury. He only has 8 games under his belt as the left tackle, but was exceptional there, and his testing numbers are out off the charts for an offensive lineman. He's a guy who could really rise in this process as teams become more familiar with him. Cody Fajardo told the media that he was happy the Alouettes avoided a Toronto-like mass exodus in free agency. Will their continuity help Montreal potentially get back to the Grey Cup?
I think it's possible, but I also think, counterpoint, the Alouettes had no continuity from 2022 to 2023, and they ended a long Grey Cup trip. So, yes, I think we often talk about continuity as being a positive thing, but man, I don't know. If it's such a positive thing, how did Alouettes have so much success last year? I don't know. It's an interesting question. 4-time All-Star linebacker Larry Dean ended his 8-year CFL career to join the Saskatchewan Roughriders front office. Do you think he could be a GM someday?
I hope he can be. And I think there's a number of people in Regina who would prefer him to be the GM now over Jeremy O'Day.
Ouch!
But good on Jeremy O'Day for giving back in the way that the opportunity was given to him, taking a player straight out of retirement and giving him a chance to grow in essentially the same role he was back in the day when Ken Miller and Brendan Tamman were there in Saskatchewan. I really like this, and it's good for the CFL and the CFL's PA's mentorship or internship program that they run, that now they've got an alumnus who has directly gone into a CFL front office after retirement.
Hey,
it's a good thing all around.
You said alumnus instead of alum. I taught you something. Let's
yeah,
go.
You did.
Let's go.
I'm constantly improving, Hodge. I'm made of multitudes. Hodge, you reported that Canadian defensive lineman Michael Hoyt is pursuing NFL free agency after 4 seasons with the Los Angeles Rams. Where do you think he'll sign?
Well, I think there's a chance he could be back with the Rams. The Rams did not tender him a qualifying offer because that would have cost essentially $3 million. And I think the Rams were hoping to maybe get him back for less than that. That being said, I also think the Rams have played him grossly out of position. This is a 300-pound man who needs to be rushing the passer and playing along the defensive line. They've largely been asking him to play outside linebacker and go, you know, drop into pass coverage, something that he literally never did prior to playing in the NFL. So to me, I think that maybe a fresh start elsewhere would be good. But as of now, my understanding is there's no deal in place with any of the league's 32 teams. CFL legends Don Narcisse and James West are being inducted into the Texas Southern Hall of Fame. Are those two deserving choices?
Absolutely. I don't think there are many people who are more deserving. Obviously, both of them have their pro accolades, but were excellent for the Tigers as well. Narcisse in particular, this is a guy who led all of the FCS, at that time it was Division I AA, in receiving his senior year, and still holds the school single season receiving receptions record. These guys were exceptional in college, and they get to go in to the Hall of Fame alongside guys like Michael Strahan, who are, as we know, a Hall of Fame caliber NFL player. Well, it's nice to see some CFL players getting the same amount of love. The Winnipeg Jets invited University of Manitoba kicker Maya Turner to drop the puck at the Canada Life Center in celebration of Women in Sports. Were you there to check it out, Hodge?
I was not. I did recently get to go to a Jets game when they hosted the Pens. This particular night they lost to the Kraken. But I love that Maya Turner is getting accolades for what she accomplished, kicking 11 of 14 field goal attempts with a long of 48. Those are very respectable numbers for U Sports. And something I will remind people of, she is from Minnesota originally. However, if she completes her four-year program at the University of Manitoba and graduates, she will qualify as a national player in the CFL. Wouldn't it be something if we saw Maya Turner at a CFL kicking combine someday, and dare I even say, sign a contract? That'd be pretty amazing. The CFL has launched a pair of passing showcases for U Sports and CJFL underclassmen. Do you like that initiative?
I absolutely love it. I think it's a great opportunity to develop the game. It's nice to see the AUS doing their own thing, although I wish they would include some of those Atlantic Football League teams, the Dalhousies and the Holland Colleges of the world, in that showcase. But out west, the fact that the CJFL teams are going to be out there alongside the U Sports teams, I absolutely adore that aspect of this initiative, giving more kids an opportunity to develop, get in front of CFL eyes, and get in front of U Sports eyes, and potentially get recruited and go up a level of competition. You love to see it. Canadian offensive lineman Sage Dockstader was added to the injured reserve by the UFL's St. Louis Battlehawks. Do you think we'll ever see him sign in the CFL?
I do. This is a former, I believe it was second round draft pick of the Toronto Argonauts. He has exhausted NFL opportunities. I think this UFL opportunity was supposed to be kind of one last shot at potentially getting back to the NFL. But this is a guy who suffered a hand ligament injury. Unclear if he's going to miss the rest of the season or not. But regardless, it does not look like he'll be playing much, if at all, in 2024. And I do think it's possible that we'll see him sign with the Argos at some point in the next year. The 110th Grey Cup generated $73.5 million in total economic impact, according to a study from Sport Tourism Canada. By the way, I'm pretty sure about 2% of that was me buying Red Bulls just to try to keep going and make it through the week. Do you believe that figure?
I am not an economist, so I cannot speak to the validity of this figure. It should be noted that this is something that gets commissioned by the CFL and by the Hamilton Tiger Cats. All the events that have these studies done are commissioned. So are they completely objective? Do they put things in a context that maybe makes these events look more impactful than they are? I think that's fair to speculate on.
Do you think they hired the same firm I did to conclude that I'm the best looking person in the world?
I think that's very much a potential. Look,
because my guys were totally unbiased. Admittedly, it was headed by my mom. But other than that, it was a very legitimate study.
Well, in this case, you look at some of the numbers, and they're talking about all the events that happened in Grey Cup week, including some of the concerts that were loosely tied to it. And I find some of the numbers in terms of 64% of people or something like that were there just for Grey Cup. That seems a little bit high to me. I wonder if they're going up with their surveys only to people who are wearing Grey Cup gear just to pump those numbers up. I don't entirely trust every figure here.
That's fair.
6'7" quarterback Casey Bowman has been added to the 2024 CFL draft. How'd he qualify for Canadian status, Hodge?
Well, this is a great example of a player who, though he didn't have Canadian citizenship, until very recently, did spend a ton of time in Canada. He grew up in Sumac. I hope I'm saying that correctly, Washington, which is literally touching the Canada-U.S. border.
Sumas.
It is a Sumas. My apologies. Thank you. Sumas, Washington, literally a border town. It is a 15-minute drive to downtown Abbotsford, B.C., which is where his mother, Kelly, was born. So Casey and his family spent a ton of time. He said they've had Nexus cards forever. They regularly go to Canada, even just to do their grocery shopping. They will go to Canada and do a Costco run. So Casey Bauman is in the draft. Is he draftable? That's a fair question. He won a couple of games as a starter at Montana State prior to transferring to Division II Augustana, which is located in South Dakota. But regardless, I'm thrilled to hear that we're getting another quarterback at the CFL Combine in Winnipeg. Between him and Jack Zurgiotis, I do think that we're going to see some potentially really exciting quarterback play, which will obviously elevate that event, not just for the media who are in attendance, but of course the fans, because a lot of the on-field testing in Winnipeg will, from what I understand, be open to the public. On that note, we thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. Please join us next week for a very special CFL Combine episode, as we will, of course, be attending the Combine in Winnipeg. Hopefully the weather is better by then, because right now Winnipeg is literally a giant skating rink. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Actually, half skating rink, half pool. That is what we are right now. But we'll get it figured out. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.